Welcome to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. In this podcast, we'll explore trends, issues, and events surrounding Lutheran education. In each episode, we'll invite educational experts to shed light on topics that support educators, administrators, and staff. Thank you for listening to LSEM's Lutheran Education Podcast.
Education Podcast, sponsored by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. My name is Richard Schumacher. I am the Director of Programs and Services for LSEM, and today we are once again joined by Special Education Director for Lutheran Special Education Ministries, Kara Bratton. Kara, how are you doing today?
Hi, Rich. I'm good. Very cold in the Midwest, but otherwise good.
Yep. For those of you listening in, we record these obviously a little bit in advance, and today is day one of this polar vortex, Snowmageddon. You know, we're all going to freeze to death. So if you are hearing this recording, we survived, and we give thanks to God for his goodness in letting us survive this terrible, terrible cold streak. But anyway, we're going to go ahead with the thought that God's going to get us through this. And today, Kara, we're going to be picking your brain a little bit about a subject that a lot of teachers really maybe don't have a firm grasp on, but it's a critically important one in the lives of their students, that being the subject of student retention. When to hold students back, what to do through that whole process when you're considering it. So, Kara, we'll just start off with a real simple question. Is retention a good thing, a bad thing, or is it just a thing that happens?
Well, I wish I had an absolute answer to this. I always, in the field of special education, I always hate speaking in absolutes. So I think it, for some students and in some circumstances, it can work well. It can be a good solution to things you're seeing in the classroom. For other students, it is not going to be a good decision. So I think it depends on so many factors. It depends on that individual student, what's kind of going on in the classroom. I will say, just based on my experience and observation, I think that sometimes teachers can be a little too quick to pull the retention card if they see a child not making progress or not progressing as they think they should by that point in the year for that grade. I would rather see teachers go right to, hey, you know what, I see this child struggling. What are some things I can do? What are some things I can change to see if we can catch them up so that retention is not on the table? But to answer your question, I think it can be a good thing, and it also can be a bad thing in some cases.
So it does this depend on the situation, the circumstance. There's never a time where you would agree with someone who says you should never retain a student. But you would also not say that retention is something that should be considered as a first step then.
Correct. I always like to give the wishy-washy answers of sometimes yes, sometimes no. Again, I've seen it be successful in some circumstances with some kids who, again, depending on emotional factors, academic factors, also what grade they're in, when it happens, how it's communicated with parents, all of those things I think can play into whether it's a good decision or not.
Hey, Kara, let's talk a little bit about that grade level part of this, because you'd mentioned that that's a factor that should be considered. At what grade levels would you say retention is an option that should be considered? And is there a year or an age where retention becomes less likely to be of help?
Well, before I answer that, too, let me just give the caveat, and this could apply to a lot of the questions today also, that I understand, you know, different states have different requirements. A lot of states now have some kind of third grade reading law or third grade mandate where standardized testing, you know, depending on that score, that might dictate what grade the student is in and things like that. So obviously a teacher and a parent, you know, in some states they have a little bit of control over that. But when I answer these questions, I'm just going to be talking just kind of more in general.
Sure.
But research really just shows over and over again, if you're going to retain a student, the earlier you can do it, the better. So, you know, a lot of students you might see coming into kindergarten and it's kind of questionable, or they're kind of right on the border of, you know, that age cutoff type of thing. So kindergarten, first grade, I would say if you're going to do it, those would be the ideal grades to do it. Again, understanding sometimes it has to happen in third grade because of state laws and things like that. But otherwise, by the time that child is in, you know, third grade and above, retention really can cause a lot of other issues for that student, and a lot of emotional issues, a lot of motivational issues. So really, in general, the earlier the better if that is going to be what happens for that student.
So once you're getting into the upper elementary, middle school grades, you would say that really isn't an option you should pursue?
Well, again, I don't want to say absolutely it's not, but the research really shows that kids, one, if they are retained in those upper grades, a lot of times the bang for the buck is very, very little.
Sure.
And the trade-off is you then have a lot of emotional issues with certain kids because they kind of are a little more aware that they're being held back. Their motivation might be a lot more lacking if they realize they're being retained in those grades. There again, my thought is, if retention is looking to be an option at that point, if it's due to, something like, oh, the child's just not keeping up academically, then my default would again go towards, okay, let's dig a little deeper. Why aren't they doing well? Is it because they're absent a lot? You know, that could be one kind of case. Or is it because, is something going on with their academics? Do they maybe need some kind of evaluation to see if there's a learning disability or things like that? And also looking at things the teacher can do and what has the teacher already tried to kind of support that student. So I would want to see all of those things kind of in place and seeing what's already happened to get a bigger picture, especially as the child gets older.
We're talking to Kara Bratton, the Special Education Director at Lutheran Special Education Ministries, about the topic of retention. Kara, at what point in the school year should a teacher begin thinking about retaining a student?
Well, I think if that is in a teacher's mind, I think, you know, one, the sooner that thought is out and, you know, possibly shared with parents and principal, the better. Again, if the teacher is thinking even by the end of first quarter or between the end of first quarter and Christmas, if retention's already a thought in that teacher's mind, then I think that really should be addressed at that point. But there again, maybe where the teacher's thinking retention, but maybe in sitting down and talking with the parent and the principal, saying, hey, you know what, the real issue here is that either, you know, one, is it the child's already been absent for 20 days and they're missing a lot of content? Is it more of a developmental thing? Is it, you know, are they developmentally immature? Are they young? That kind of thing. Or if it's strictly, hey, they're not keeping up academically, then, you know, let's kind of change the narrative of that conversation and not just go right to the retention, but let's go right to the kind of problem-solving mode, especially if it's earlier in the year, first, second, third quarter. You know, let's see what some things are that we can do, and let's brainstorm solutions rather than just, you know, kind of, I don't want to say the easy solution, but sometimes retention could just seem like, okay, if we retain the student, they'll get it next year, and then we don't have to change anything for the rest of the year. So I would rather see it as a kind of a collaboration, problem solving, as soon as the teacher's kind of noticing that there is an issue in the year. I think if it gets to be too late in the year, there again, it's never too late to put accommodations and things like that into place and try to differentiate instruction more to see if that's successful for that student. But there is that point in the year where if a parent has not been approached about retention, that it might be could be considered a little bit, you know, too late, or the parent might be very taken aback by that discussion at that point.
Now, on the flip side of that, though, if you're talking about retention too early in the school year, might the parent get the sense that the teacher's kind of giving up on the student before they've really had a chance to develop throughout the course of that year?
No, absolutely. And that's why my recommendation would be, if it is going through the teacher's brain, oh, I already think the student needs to be retained, maybe the teacher's thinking that, but when we approach it with the parents, say it's November, let's not talk about retention. Let's talk about problem solving. Let's talk about, these are the things I'm seeing in the classroom. These are the issues. So how can we change this for the rest of the year? Because I agree with you. If by October, November, you're already talking, you're already saying the word retention, I do believe that that could be too early. But I do also believe that there are teachers who are thinking that in their heads at that point. So my suggestion, again, is just to, you know, use your team, use your principal, use other people in your building, use the parents, and kind of take a problem-solving approach if you are having those thoughts that early in the year.
So a good approach would be communication, 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 building a team, working together to solve problems, to assess, analyze, discuss, and maintain those lines of communication so that as the year goes on, we either see the increase in success or we come to a group agreement that this might be the best option moving forward.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, with parents as well, sometimes, you know, there might be things happening at school or happening at home that one or the other does not know about, that, you know, a teacher could say, oh, well, they've already been absent 30 times. Well, maybe there's something going on at home that that teacher doesn't know about. So opening those lines of communication, one, just give everybody more information to work with and, again, kind of solve those problems, and also be consistent between home and school, because if home does not realize that there's a significant of an issue as what the teacher thinks, and maybe the teacher is trying some things, it's always good for the parent to know and to be able to follow through. Then later in the year, if progress is not being made, then it's a good time, too, to check in with the parents, see if those things are happening at home that maybe were recommended back in November or December. So, like you said, communication is really the key, and just that teamwork approach instead of a, you know, school versus parent type of situation.
So, Kara, what performance criteria should the teachers be monitoring? What are the things that are going to raise the warning signs that there's a significant issue at play with the student that might rise to the level of needing retention?
Well, I see a lot of it as academic types of things. I think, you know, that's a lot of what teachers will kind of notice first and foremost. Again, if they have a class of, you know, 15 to 25 kids, if they have a couple who are not academically where the others are, I think that a lot of times will be the standout and will jump out to those teachers. And that will kind of be that, okay, what's going on here? And kind of raise that warning sign. I think the other thing too, like I've mentioned a couple times, attendance is a huge thing. I mean, we all know if the student is missing a significant amount of school, that's going to be a red flag for them to keep up academically.
Right.
So if the teacher is seeing a lot of absences, you know, homework not being done, that kind of thing. I would say the other red flag, and my experience, I tend to see this more at, you know, that kindergarten level, sometimes preschool, maybe first grade, is just that emotional maturity and just kind of that, you know, is the student developmentally where the other kids are? Not even so much academically, but do they have the maturity? Do they have those skills? And a lot of times, you know, kindergarten, you might see that with boys more than girls, especially if they have a late birthday, that kind of thing. So I think all of those things are things the teacher might be looking at and that might kind of raise some red flags as the year goes on.
We're talking about the topic of retention in schools with Kara Bratton, the Special Education Director at Lutheran Special Education Ministries. We're going to step aside for just a brief break here. We'll continue the conversation with Kara after this short message from Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Lutheran Special Education Ministries is an organization committed to serving schools, churches, and families to advance the success of children who have learning needs. Our commitment to this mission began with the opening of the Lutheran School for the Deaf in Detroit. Over the years, our ministry has expanded, and today LSEM is proud to serve in Lutheran schools across the country. But as our ministry has grown, our commitment to helping students succeed academically in an environment where they can also grow spiritually is as strong as ever. So if your church or school is looking for professional development for your faculty, information to share with struggling families, or for a ministry partner to support an existing resource room or start a new one, LSEM is ready to help you meet your specialized learning goals. For more information about how LSEM can help you build brighter futures for your students, please contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. That's www.luthsped.org.
Welcome back to the Lutheran Education Podcast. We're talking with Kara Bratton, Special Education Director at LSEM, and we're discussing retention, one of the more difficult decisions that our teachers have to make in the lives of our students, but one that hopefully provides benefits for the student as they grow and evolve. Kara, when we were last talking, we were discussing some of those performance criteria that we saw in our students, and you've been a big proponent, as we've talked here, about the teacher not just simply hopping on the bandwagon of retention, but really working to try and help a student. So it got me thinking here, should the teacher use accommodations for a struggling student in this situation, or might that adversely affect the data that would support the decision to retain by the end of the year?
Well, I am always a fan of making accommodations and giving kids the support we feel that they need when they need it, and not waiting and not worrying about, oh, well, you know, again, this might affect data, or, well, maybe they're not going to qualify for testing if I provide an accommodation now. So I am always a fan of just, you know, treating that child as an individual. If you see them struggling with something, if you think that there's something you might do to help that and turn that around, again, retention should never be our goal. If we wanted to see students retained and held back, then maybe we could delay giving those accommodations and supports. But our goal is that child is academically and emotionally successful as their peers, that they can move on to the next grade level. So I think those accommodations and those supports are really necessary. So they might adversely affect the data if a teacher was looking for a reason to retain them, but in my mind, that's what we want. We want to kind of change the narrative. And if we think it's a struggling child, or we know it's a struggling child, we want to turn that around. And I'll also say, too, you know, the other thing over and over again with retention, and this is where I think it's difficult in our Lutheran schools, because many of them have small staff, maybe just a single grade level or single classroom per grade level, is that, you know, the other thing we know about retention is that if a child is going to be retained and if they're just going to be exposed to the exact same teacher, the exact same curriculum, and the exact same methodology and tools and supports as they were before, that's likely not going to make a difference in the child's academics. Again, if there's other factors that play, you know, developmental types of things, maturity, even attendance, that might be a different story. But if you're really talking about a child that's just struggling academically and you think, okay, well, another year in first grade with the same teacher doing the exact same thing, okay, they're just going to pick it up a second time. That has been shown over and over again that is likely not going to be the case and that's not going to work well. So if we see a child that, again, might be questionable, their teacher's thinking, okay, this might be a child that would need to be retained, providing those accommodations and supports, and this is what I say all the time too, with struggling students, special ed students, document what was being done with that student and what those results were. So regardless then of going forward, if the child advances to the next grade, or say the child is retained and either has to be with the same teacher or is going to the other third grade teacher, if there is one in the building, then that teacher knows, okay, these were things that were tried and that student was still struggling. So, you know, again, I don't want to do the same thing over and over again, hoping for a different result. So that gives the next teacher, regardless of what grade that is, information on the student and what helped and what did not help so much. So those accommodations really are critical in this kind of big picture of what's going to help that student be successful. And that's our goal, is that our students are successful.
So let's follow that conversation there, too, about the teacher who will have the same student for a second year. Because, again, in many of our Lutheran schools, a second grade level teacher just isn't a luxury that they have. What should that conversation be like with the principal and that teacher in terms of how they're going to change things up? I know we're creatures of habit, and oftentimes as teachers, we do things that have worked for us historically, and change can be a little difficult. So what types of things should the teacher try to do, and how can the principal help to support and encourage the teacher to be able to make those effective changes?
Right. And I agree with you. That definitely is something we see in our Lutheran schools, and, you know, maybe is less than ideal in terms of retaining a student. And obviously, you know, in most cases, if, say, we're, you know, retaining a first grader, you know, not saying that the teacher needs to change their core curriculum and things like that, because that's just not going to be possible. But if the teacher knows, okay, this is the curriculum I used, you know, the student was not successful with this the prior year, you know, one, looking at what accommodations were maybe given the year before, if there was anything that did help that student continue doing that. But I think there, again, collaborating with, as you said, the principal, if there is some kind of resource, you know, or special ed person in the building, or just bringing in someone with maybe some different ideas, you know, maybe, for instance, if the student is really, really having trouble, you know, decoding, but their comprehension is great. So, okay, we know what the core curriculum is. We know they need more focused help on decoding, but then let's look at the structure of the classroom and see, okay, you know, is there small group time? Is there time that I could work with students, and I'm sure other students in the class that are really struggling with decoding? Or is there someone else in the building that could work with the student on decoding one-on-one or in a small group, whether that's an aide or, as I said, if there's a resource or special ed person in the building? But then also seeing, okay, we know the student is strong or weak in decoding, but strong in reading comprehension. So let's give more opportunities for that reading comprehension. You know, so let's explore the strengths as well as those weak areas. So it's not so much that the core curriculum has to change, because that's going to be about impossible, but just kind of looking big picture. And I agree that the principal could be helpful with this too, saying, okay, how can we deliver this child the extra support in those areas that they need? So maybe the core curriculum looks the same, but we're addressing that individual child's needs and kind of that reason why they were retained in the first place.
And I imagine documentation of all of these conversations and the approaches and the accommodations is critical.
I definitely think so. I am a big fan of documentation. I think, again, people with great memories, you can kind of remember what you did, but going forward, and just so everybody has a clear picture, teachers, parents, and principal, just documentation is that easiest way to kind of see what works. And also for parents, some parents are, you know, going to be very, very resistant to a child being retained. But if, say, again, that child is retained in first grade, but the spring before, if everybody sits down and says, okay, this child is going to be in first grade again, but here's our plan. This is what we're going to do differently so that we're hoping for a different result. If parents don't know what that plan is going into the next year, my opinion is they're going to be much more resistant to that their child being retained. But if they see that, okay, this could be beneficial because they have a plan, this is what we're going to do, and we're all in agreement, that makes it very easy to be spelled out for the parent. And just like a lot of our kids tend to do well with visuals, I think parents do too. It's just, it's a cut and dry, it's a communication, it's a document for them to fall back on then also. If the, in the upcoming year, say that child is retained, or if that child advances to the next grade, and there likely would be accommodations that would need to be in place for that child to advance if they were kind of on the fence struggling, it holds everybody accountable to say, no, this is what we agreed on last spring or whenever that meeting was. So now everybody, teachers, parents, the school, everybody needs to do their part.
We're talking to Kara Bratton about retention on the Lutheran Education Podcast. Kara, one of the more common concerns that we hear when it comes to retaining a student, say you have a student who's a first grader and they're struggling and retention is the topic, but they've got a sibling who is in that grade level one grade below, which means retention would now put both of the siblings in the same grade. Many parents are really apprehensive about setting up a situation like that. And my question to you is, should they be?
Well, there again, I'm going to give kind of a wishy-washy answer. I think that depending on the family and depending on the siblings, it could be a reason for concern. And in some cases, it can actually work out well. So there again, just kind of depending on the kids, their personalities, how they interact with each other. And that's where I think parents would probably have a good idea about how that would work. Ideally, if that was going to be the case and there were, say, two first grade classrooms, my default would be to, you know, split the siblings up among the first grade classrooms. But again, realizing that's not an option in many of our Lutheran schools. So not to sound totally wishy-washy, but to answer your question, I think it really just depends on those individual students. But I think that does need to factor into the decision, because if, say, everybody recognizes, you know, the teacher who had the other sibling who's going to be in first grade, say, and the parents and everybody just kind of foresees this disaster coming, that those two children in the same class is not going to be good, or it's going to hold back that child who's being retained, if that's going to create some more emotional issues and more social issues for that child, then that's something that definitely needs to be considered in those discussions.
So when a student is going to be retained, obviously having more time with the curriculum, the opportunity to mature a bit, those are all factors that we hope will help the student to achieve greater success. What other factors should a teacher and school consider when they're holding a student back or facing a decision to do so?
Well, I think we've touched on kind of a lot of them kind of throughout the course of the conversation. As I've mentioned, you know, kind of days absent, that can play a big role. Again, if there's a lot of absences due to an illness, something going on with the family, that's definitely a factor. Also, you know, developmental maturity of the student can be a factor. Age can be a factor, especially when they're young, those kinds of things. So I think those are really, to me, the main factors, at least when I come in or I'm asked about retention, those are things I want to know. I would say the other big thing we haven't really talked about yet is, you know, my first question is always, okay, does this child have some kind of diagnosed disability? Do they have an IEP? And in cases where the child is very young, again, kindergarten, first grade, it's less likely that they would have an IEP, but, you know, still something good to consider. So those factors too, if there are some medical things, if there's ADHD, so those factors are very, very important as well. See if there's already an established reason why that child is academically behind or socially behind and those kinds of things.
And if a student is not been identified or diagnosed at this point, is this a good opportunity to begin that observation process and the data collection needed to start the process?
I always think it is, because I think if you're starting to have concerns about a student, again, my advice is always to start documenting, because even if it's not that year, either if it's that child is being retained and you're going to be the teacher the next year, or that child is going to advance and that they're still struggling or they're still struggling after they're retained, and then you're looking to see, okay, is there a reason for this academic, difficulty? You're going to want to have all those things documented for whoever is doing an evaluation. And best case scenario, you start documenting things, and what we want to happen is you document and you see student growth. And so, again, you know what works, and you think, you know what? I really don't think this child needs to be evaluated because they're making a lot of progress. We've got a good thing going. So, worst case scenario, you spend your time documenting and see that everything is successful. So it's not going to hurt. All that's going to do is just say, okay, we documented what we did. We documented what showed that student, what helped that student be successful.
So that's a good approach for the student who doesn't have the diagnosis. Now let's talk about how would you approach this whole conversation of retention for a student who does have an IEP, has been diagnosed with a learning disability?
So here again, this is where I talk to teachers a lot, that there really needs to be an understanding of what that disability is and, how that's shown and, the implications for the classroom. Going back to an example I used earlier, a student with maybe, say, a diagnosed reading disability. So maybe we're seeing in the second grade classroom, okay, that child is really struggling with decoding. Their fluency is really weak, but they have a reading disability. Well, that's what we would expect. We would expect those things. But then say that child is very, very strong in math and maybe reading comprehension. So I would look at that and say, that's very typical for a child with a reading disability. So we need to address the reading disability or the learning disability or whatever the diagnosis is. We know about students with identified learning needs, their learning profiles are going to be very, very different. They're going to have strengths and weaknesses. And I think that the hard part for teachers sometimes is to say, okay, we have a second grader who, again, is weak in decoding. I can't possibly pass them on to third grade until their decoding catches up. Well, with a child with a disability, we don't know when that's going to be. We don't know if, another year in second grade is going to catch that up. We don't know if it's going to take 2 years. So what we do know is, again, we need to address the weaknesses, but also not hold that child back if in the areas that they're very strong in. So, again, if we have a child who is very, very strong in math and we just identify, okay, they have a weakness in decoding, they have a reading disability, that's expected, they need those opportunities to keep learning in math and learning in the areas they're strong in, and not assuming that, oh, the other areas are going to catch up in a year or 2 years. Because if we retain a student until they're academically ready in those areas that are affected by their disability, that's, to me, that's just kind of playing with fire, because we don't know if that's ever going to happen, or we want it to happen, but that's just such a hard thing to predict. So I think we need to look at the child's disability, how that's showing itself in the classroom, but then looking at those things that they're strong at. If a child overall is very, very strong academically but has that weakness, again, let's work on the weakness, but let's not hold them back from all the other things that they could do at the next grade level and sometimes even beyond. We don't want them repeating all the second grade material just because they have one weakness in an area of reading. We want them exposed to that content, because then what happens too is we can create some different issues. We can create behavior issues. Kids can get bored if they're held back to wait for that area of their disability to catch up.
So, Kara, say the student has gone through the school year, the teacher, the principal, the parents have all worked together throughout that year, communicated effectively, and come spring, the decision is made for that student to progress on to the next grade level. How should the next grade level teacher be brought into this conversation? What information should be shared with them? And how early into the year should that take place, or the year before?
Well, there again, if the teachers and the principal and everyone has kind of been following my recommendation of kind of documenting what's happened the prior year, there should be good information to pass on to that incoming, to the teacher that the student is going to have. I would recommend having that meeting before school is out. So there again, everyone can look at the plan that's been in place, what's been done this past school year, what's been successful, what might we need to change, and then having an idea going into the following school year. Okay, these are things we're going to try. Well, these things didn't work so well. How can we adjust them? So then again, that teacher who's going to have that child the next year has a clear understanding of what's happened that year, what's worked well, what hasn't. And then I would also recommend, you know, meeting with that parent again, whether it's right before school starts or maybe after we're a couple weeks into the school year. One is just a good reminder that, hey, we're all following the plan, just kind of as a check-in, not so much an assessment of, oh, we need to change this now, but just a reminder that, hey, this is what we're doing. I know how it is for, you know, for teachers over the summer, and I think it's the same for parents and definitely for students. You know, you can have a meeting before the school year is over, and then by August, you kind of have a remembrance that, oh, yeah, this student, I know I need to do something, and I know I have that in their file, but just to kind of bring it to the forefront again, so everyone's on that same page after, you know, the 8-week break, that this is what we're doing going forward. So I think that kind of springtime, but again, a follow-up either right, you know, right around the time school starts, I think would be good, just as a check-in and reminder for everybody.
And not during the back-to-school parent night when you've got 25 other parents who are standing there with their own questions. It's something that's got to be a little more detailed and take a little bit more time to be personal and to be effective.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if anything, sometimes those back-to-school nights might be a time to say, hey, remember we talked about Susie back before school was out. Could we set up a time in this next week to sit down and talk a little more and just make sure we're all on the same page again? So, yes, definitely don't address it during back-to-school time. Teachers are many times frazzled that night trying to organize everything, and parents are frazzled getting into routines. But that could be a good time just to talk to the teacher and maybe set up a time to meet, if nothing else.
All right, Kara, thank you. Great information as always. If any of the listeners want to reach out to you to talk more specifically about this topic of retention or any topic having to do with learners in their schools, how would they go about reaching you?
So the best way to get a hold of me is through email, and my email is kbratton, that's B-R-A-T-T-O-N, at luthsped.org. So kbratton at luthsped.org. And I'll also add, too, on that topic of retention, one final kind of resource I found kind of helpful is understood.org. It's a website for parents who have kids with maybe learning or attention difficulties, but it's very helpful for teachers, also very helpful regarding students that maybe don't have diagnosed needs. But they have a tool called the Decision Guide, and it walks you through. You can choose, like one of the choices is start kindergarten now or wait a year, but also move up or repeat a grade is another one of the options they give for the Decision Guide. So it walks you through a series of questions, and then as the parent or teacher responds to the questions, it gives you some research, it gives you some information on how you responded to that question, and then by the end kind of gives you an idea if, you know, retention might be a good idea or if there should be other things that you look at. So that might be a good resource also for the listeners to check out. So just, you know, it's kind of a guided step-by-step to walk through this process.
All right, Kara, thank you so very much. Again, Kara Bratton, the Special Education Director here at Lutheran Special Education Ministries, thank you for your time and for your expertise. We look forward to talking to you again in future episodes of the podcast.
Yep, thank you, Rich. Thank you for having me again.
And thank you to everyone for listening. You have been listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, sponsored by Lutheran Special Education Ministries.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Education Podcast, brought to you by Lutheran Special Education Ministries. To hear future episodes, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. For more information on this episode's topic or any other questions regarding Lutheran education or Lutheran Special Education Ministries, please feel free to contact us at 248-419-3390 or visit our website at www.luthsped.org. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.